Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and it is now September. However, we are still talking about how recruiting works, and this time we're doing it with UMBC head coach James Papura. Recently announced, Coach Papura, congratulations. How is the new chair finding you?
Thanks, Terry. I'm excited to hop on the call today, and it's been great. It's great being a head coach again and getting to meet, you know, 45 new guys and new staff, and there's a lot of excitement here.
I would say that there pretty much every college lacrosse coach likes recruiting because you have to, because if you don't, you're not going to last long in the field. Some love it, and among the group that loves it, you stand out as somebody who really loves it. Like, you are as down to talk about prospective players as anybody. Can you just describe why?
I think at the end of the day, it starts with you just love the sport. You love lacrosse. You love the chase. You love the evaluation. And then, you know, hopefully the evolution of the development of the student athlete, the graduation piece, and just to see that growth. So, I love getting, it's all about building relationships for me. It starts with getting to meet the families, you know, as September 9th now comes along, to hear their stories and talking to people. You really get a good feel for who they are as people. And are they somebody that you want to be around every single day for the next 4 or now 5 years? And again, I just think building relationships is why you do what you do. And I think having that process of adding the sport aspect of it is something really compelling if you love what you do.
How do you describe yourself as an evaluator?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, everybody's got their, like, certain things that they love. You know, certainly you're looking at and evaluating a lot of different things. I kind of look at, like, four co-actives, I like to say, and they would be, like, the psychological piece, and that to me that is, what kind of person are they? Are they going to fit our culture? Are they competitive? Are they confident when they play? Those are really big, because if you can't fit into the culture that you're building in your program, if you're not going to do the extra things, if you don't have a positive attitude, you're probably not going to work out in the long run. We want guys that are going to maximize and develop. We talk a lot about, like, the tactical piece, the IQ. You look at the technical piece. I think that's the thing that you do the most in practice every day, the fundamentals, the skill aspect, the things that you're constantly working on. And then certainly the physical component. And I think that's something that really pops when you evaluate, is who just is different out there, who can put their foot in the ground, who can, you know, have an explosive first step, who's imposing themselves and setting the edge defensively. That one's a little bit harder for us to teach. And I think with my evolution of having coached at a lot of different places and in different levels, that's the beauty of it. You know, if you're a mid-major school, if you have all four of those things, you're probably going to a big-time ACC, Ivy, Big Ten school. Our job is to find two or three of those things and be the best at developing the one or two things that those players have as areas of growth.
So I like to shape every conversation consistently and individualized. And I think the most compelling part of your story or a conversation that you could have about recruiting is the diversity of the places at which you've had to recruit. And feel free to jump in on any of the stops prior to VMI. But for me, that's where, you know, I think it makes the most sense to start the conversation. So, you know, VMI, a relatively unique institution on the landscape of Division I lacrosse in terms of its geography in Lexington, Virginia, the commitment that attendees are expected to make from the standpoint of the military service component of it, which is not compulsory, and also has to be earned, but certainly is a part of the student experience. And then, you know, obviously the kind of legacy of just struggling to get wins, and how you managed to put together a group that had one of the most successful seasons in program history a couple years ago. So with that as pretext, how do you describe the journey or the year-over-year process of just trying to stack talent and increasingly better classes during your time leading the Keydets?
Yeah, you know, I think going there was obviously an opportunity to, you know, certainly wasn't perfect. And I think, as we tell our players all the time, growth isn't linear. You're going to have your ups and your downs, but can you learn from those moments of failure and continue to improve? What was really challenging about that is when I got hired was the heart of COVID summer. So there was no recruiting. None of it was, physical in person. It was all virtual. So we were looking at all the different softwares at the time, watching a ton of highlight tapes, our staff, and just evaluating how could we just add skill? It was less about, having 4 or 5 pulls in a class. It was like, we got to make sure we just get the best players. And if we take 1 or 2 extra, that's good, because the reality is, you're always a phone call away from losing somebody that, out processes and leaves the school in that first, week or two matriculation period. So if you bring in one faceoff guy and he OPs the first night, you're going to struggle at the X. So early on, it was really just strength in numbers and finding the right people. And we knew as we built the culture, the right guys would stay. And obviously, when you start to win some games and you have a great story to tell, that makes recruiting a little bit easier when people start to see that. And I do think every school has what they're really good at. What are those niches? And then what are they? And how can you use them as a competitive advantage to really, utilize that in your recruiting, right? And I think VMI being a unique school obviously had certain things that other schools didn't, and that could be really appealing to certain student athletes.
Are there 1 or 2 examples of recruiting stories that ended up flourishing into standout players for the program that stand out in your memory?
I think Luke Rusterucci's is always a good one. He was committed when I got hired and, recommitted when we first got hired. We talked to him and got to meet his family. And I always like to tell this story because he was born in Macon, Georgia. And being from Macon, Georgia, where lacrosse wasn't prevalent, Mercer adds lacrosse in like 2012, I think. He does a youth camp with Kyle Hannon. And next thing you know, fast forward, all those years later, he's scoring, having a big game where I think he had like 5 goals and we beat Mercer in his hometown. And so, he was a kid that was under recruited, didn't really have a ton of Division I looks or offers, and was not, a ranked guy, but he worked really hard. He was relentless work ethic and very persistent and ultimately developed into an All-American attackman. And I think that was something that was really cool from a development standpoint. We had some other guys, that thought some of the goalies, Jake Merrick was actually verbally committed to us before he went to Air Force. But in that same class, we had a guy named Damian Levin who came on his senior year and had an unbelievable year. I think he finished top 5 in save percentage, and he was one of our last gets from Long Island and Haw Pog late in the journey there. So there's just so many cool stories where guys just commit at a different length, or maybe one of your best players comes in super late in the summer in the class and ends up being one of the best guys. And again, there's not really a perfect path, and but there were some really cool journeys, and I'm really thankful for the time that I did have there and the relationships that I built and still maintain today with a lot of those guys.
So then, as mentioned, lead the program to new high watermark, and then the opportunity to join Ohio State as an assistant coach arose. And you went there for the 2025 fall and 2026 season, and obviously going through the recruiting cycle for the Buckeyes is a completely different animal. How do you describe that? What was that like?
Yeah, I think it was a great learning experience, and just to see how the ACCs, the Big Tens, the Ivies, how they kind of operate. I guess I can't really say to the Ivy, but a lot of those 3 conferences are the ones that a lot of the top end guys are after. And you're doing a ton of homework with your club coaches ahead of time and really finding out what exactly, what is that player looking for and is it a realistic fit? And I think you navigate right away of this kid's, a straight A student and academics are incredibly important and family is expecting Ivy, then it's going to be a tough fight. And so you start to learn, again, similar to the VMI in the sense of there's a certain competitive advantage that your school has to offer. But it's really fun to be able to recruit the best players in the class and track down and go to every event and know inside and out who are the best players at each position, how is it going to shake out, who's realistic, who do we have a great chance at. And then like anything else, once you know who those guys are, you're building great relationships. It's a little bit more of a rat race sometimes at that level, like, you know, start the engines, and in 2 or 3 weeks, most of those classes are going to be done at the Power Conference schools. It's who can you get to visit in the first or second weekend, and just the overall experience and big time college football. You know, I remember my wife and I's first game there last year was Texas, which was the 1-2, and so just different, but a great experience nonetheless to see. And it just gives you so much perspective between that and your mid majors, and then having experience in Division II or Division III. It's just, they're all different, but at the end of the day, it's still all relationship building.
And so, as you mentioned at the top, now having the opportunity to once again become a head coach, this time at UMBC, you know, a lot about this situation that was unique, but one of the elements was the timing of it, comparatively late in the summer after the dead period. What did that timing mean relative to your ability to familiarize yourself with the UMBC commits in the 27 class, identify where there might be opportunities to add more 27 commits, and then shift your focus as you were evaluating 28s to more of a retriever-based lens as opposed to a Buckeye-based lens?
Yeah, you know, with the being at Ohio State, I was really fortunate to have a pretty good start on the 2028 class and even the 2029s to an extent. And watching a lot of those guys and starting to build out a board there. I did not have as much in the 2027s at the time, just because we were a little bit more there. You'd still watch an occasional game or watch some of your committed kids, but I had kept a list. You always kind of do, right, of guys who you think maybe are in that next tier of just below maybe that ACC Big Ten. Or what is the reason why they're not going to those schools? Are they slightly undersized? Is it you know, a skill component that could be worked on. And so going through old notes, looking at who was still uncommitted and looking for a home, but also really evaluating the 2027 class that we have here at UMBC. And I was fortunate to know I was going there while we're still waiting for it to get announced. Sometimes public institutions can take a little longer than people may like. But I was able to watch a lot of the committed kids, you know, at the beginning of July before the end of this cycle to kind of evaluate. And that really allowed us to be like, all right, well, where's an area of growth? Where do we need a little bit more depth in this class? Where do we like spots in this class? And how can we make this class as good as possible going into November and signing day? And, you know, within the first 2 weeks here, we brought in 4 guys to that class of verbal commitments. And we still may add 1 or 2 more. You're not going to close the door, especially with roster limits and sizes and things of that nature, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit. But also allowed us to start posturing for what is our 2028 class going to look at like. And we don't want to also just take kids for the sake of taking them to use up a roster spot if we feel better about where we're at in 2028 and our evals there.
Let's take a little bit of a sidebar here in terms of how, you know, your assistance and the way in which you guys are approaching this as a staff, particularly through the lens of you had to get to know them. So Coach Chick, Coach Griffin, I apologize if I'm not sure whether you've got a third assistant at the moment. How do you just kind of describe those guys and the roles that each is intended to fill?
Yeah, you know, I think as a guy who aspires to be a head coach, you're always keeping a list of names, right? You know, if an opportunity presents itself, who are you bringing with you? Who are guys you want to talk to? And in some of my dialogue this summer, you know, one of the top names I had right at the top there was Craig Chick. And it was, uniquely enough, he was already at UMBC, and I didn't know him super well. You know, we had some mutual connections, but he was the first person I called when I got the job and it was announced. And we got to know each other. We had dinner that night, and you know, I'm really fortunate that he decided to stay on, and it's been great. He stays as our associate head coach and defensive coordinator, and I think he's coached in his 7 or 8 years here. It's going to be year 8 for him. I think he's had 3 top 20 defenses, so really fortunate. I think those guys deserved every opportunity. They did some really great things here, and I'm excited to keep Nick Griffin here as well. Nick will be our offensive coordinator, and he's a guy that's been in UMBC lacrosse for over 10 years as a player, as a coach. He's coached defense, he's coached offense. His versatility, his excitement, his passion for, you know, UMBC is just something that's unmatched and really fortunate. I had a pretty good relationship with him prior to the interview process. I had actually interviewed him at VMI and when Mikey Herring was here, who had worked with me at VMI and still remains a great friend. He had worked with both these guys in 2022. So again, it's a small network of coaches. And I love that about our sport, and it's been great so far. And then we just added Kellen Arthur, who coached the last 2 years at Mercer, and was a 4-year D mid who played at Calvert Hall under, BK Brian Kelly, and really excited to have him on here as well.
And how do you describe each guy's role within the recruiting process?
It's been a lot of fun, you know, just kind of all talking about different things we've all done in the past as we formulate our board and calling coaches and formulating our final list here to go off of on September 9th. But it's great. You know, we're sitting down, we'll talk, we'll watch film, we'll talk about, well, you know, Craig, what are you looking for? What do you like in this defenseman? And, having him play at such a high level and then be in the PLL and be around some great guys. I mean, he was the all-time cause turnover leader in NCAA lacrosse for a while. He's got such a unique perspective to the game. And then you'll have Nick kind of talk about things that he likes as a different kind of defenseman. And, you know, then we'll watch him attackman. And it's just good to really have that universal dialogue and all be singing the same song to the same tune. And I think that's the great thing about lacrosse is there's different things that everybody has different perspective or different players that might have played here at UMBC and found success. And having two great guys that as resources to tell me what they thought has gone well and areas of growth where we can be better allows, you know, all of us to kind of move forward and hopefully take that next step. So it'll be shared. We're all going to do it, just like most staffs. But we're excited with the final list that we're compiling after talking to a lot of club coaches for about the last month.
You mentioned the opportunity to evaluate the 27s. How do you describe what it was like to get to know them, particularly because, obviously Coach Chick had kind of managed their commitment on an interim basis, had taken a few commitments as well over the course, from the fall through the spring. So then, you know, once you get the job and you have the opportunity to have a conversation, what were those conversations like?
Yeah, they were great. We honored everybody's commitment. And I think they were obviously recruited for a reason, and we're really excited about the guys that we have, and we're excited about the guys that we added. And so having that familiarity and stability, I think was something that was really important to me and for the players. And I just think, again, I know some people like to do things differently and come in and this and that. For me, if the best people were already here, I wanted to give them every opportunity to remain on. So, so far, I'm very excited that we've been able to do that.
Did you get a sense that they were nervous as to whether or not their commitments were going to be honored and then relieved when you told them that they were?
I just think like with anything in life, when there's uncertainty, sometimes negativity will fill its void. So the more we could communicate and the more we could create certainty was just something that gave a deep breath to everybody involved with the program.
Shifting the focus to the 28s, you mentioned that your experience at Ohio State was unique insofar as what stratosphere put you in terms of the players that you were looking at and the speed with which the class got filled. So coming to UMBC, how do you adjust your perspective and what does it do for the list that you try to build?
Yeah, you know, you're certainly doing a lot of your homework on the front end, talking to club coaches, getting transcripts, talking to people that maybe know them in the region. I think it's really important as coaches to have your kind of clique of club coaches that you have really good relationships with, or high school coaches, maybe from where you're from. And that might get you a little bit more of an in with certain guys once that window opens. And so I think it's important when you do all your homework on the front end, what's going to be interesting, right, is that a lot of the kids in the mid-major are going to get like 30 different schools that call them in the first 2 or 3 days. It's not, you know, you're definitely an ACC guy, so you're getting 3 places already narrowed down. It's, okay, well, why do I want to go to this place and what makes it better than the other places? And I think for us, it's who wants to be associated with UMBC and what we're going to have to offer academically, where we're located, the excitement, a place with tradition, guys that have played on the all-world team. And in PLL Hall of Famers like Brennan Mundorf, we got Drew Westervelt, we have Steve Marole, another guy who held a record for a long time. There's just been so much pride and tradition. There's so many positive things here. We want to make sure we do our homework on the front end to know who's realistic, who can we talk to, and then who can we build great relationships that ultimately fit and help us win our goal of competing for an America East Championship. So, you go a lot of different directions to get there, but talking to coaches and doing your evals and going through different tiers of players, who's worth a phone call, who are we going to say, make them say no, and how are we going to line up visits to get the right people here and ultimately, you know, on our boat and ready to go. So, yeah, it's been a lot of work. We're excited for it, and we're less than a week away.
You mentioned geography, and for me, that's always been one of the things that has differentiated or created like an identity or a hallmark. You know, certainly I think that there are similar types of geographic relationships, whether it be, you know, certainly Towson, whether it be Stony Brook and Hofstra, whether it be, you know, Syracuse, on one end of the spectrum. And you mentioned Westervelt and Mundorf. Well, one of them was from Bel Air and the other one was from Catonsville. So how do you think about geography, both from the standpoint of it being a benefit and an asset because you kind of have some built-in familiarity, credibility, whatever the case might be with the local guys, but also the way in which you have to avoid it being a hindrance because you don't want to have blinders on to, you know, the Long Island guys, the upstate guys, or the guys from everywhere else in the country that, you know, might look at UMBC and say, I want to play there. But you don't want to overlook them because you might be a little too focused on the local market.
Well, I'm gonna start with a fun fact, and I just got to say this to rep the brand of New York and specifically upstate. But of all the Division I Maryland schools, it's kind of a fun fact. Only one coach was actually born, I believe, in Maryland. I think it's Coach Toomey at Loyola. The rest of us are all New York guys, which is kind of funny and ironic. But to your point, I mean, there's so many great players. We're in the lacrosse capital of the world, in my opinion, and I say that as a New Yorker. There's really good lacrosse up and down the 95 corridor, but there's also great lacrosse everywhere. And if we rely solely on one area to fit our roster, there's a lot of other people coming into our territory. Now we need to win some of those fights and keep guys home, but we also got to have some diversity and sprinkle in guys from other great areas that maybe are, frankly, a little under-recruited. Or can we find that diamond in a rough? And I think in today's day and age, obviously a little bit different than years past where there was less lacrosse being played. But I think in this economy where there's the price of everything going up for tuition and some of these schools pushing, you know, the $100,000 mark, having an in-state tuition for an honors college in state of Maryland, it's a really nice luxury that even at the end of the day, if you're paying a third of what some other schools are, you know, without even any kind of scholarship or financial aid on top of that, from a financial life decision, it's going to put you in a much better position if you're a local guy. And fortunately for out-of-state kids, you know, it's not incredibly expensive either. And the last thing I'll say with it is, you know, it's one of the first things I did is I looked at a lot of the state schools in college lacrosse and like what their makeup was. And there's some schools that have less than 30% of their team from in-state. And I thought that was a really interesting metric. But I guess nowadays, you know, you're looking more at, again, who are the best lacrosse players, and you're still going to have to win the 3 or 4 hour radius around your school to keep the best kids home. But again, sprinkle some of those outsiders to fit in and mesh with the chemistry that you have in your team.
You brought up the Honors College, and that's kind of the second element of what UMBC is offering. Is can you just go a little deeper on the academic profile, both from an admission standards and from a, you know, what guys tend to study and you know, how rigorous the curriculum tends to be?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, I really learned a lot. You know, I'd heard, again, one of my playing days was the Mundorfs, the Westervelts, and those guys were finishing up their career. And that was a stretch of UMBC lacrosse that was unbelievable. Multiple conference championships under Coach Zim. And, you know, they went to an Elite Eight in 2007. And so I think I didn't know a ton about the academic profile, back then, but going through the interview process and learning about the Honors College. I mean, it's an R1 research institution as ranked by Carnegie. And I think for STEM and the sciences, I mean, that's something that we're nationally renowned for that a lot of people don't realize. So engineering, the sciences, we've got guys that are going in those routes. But we also, I think when you go to a bigger school with over 10,000 students, we have over 100 academic disciplines. So we like to say there is a path to what you want to do, no matter what it is, and we'll be able to get you there. Our largest makeup on our team, we don't have, quote unquote, a business school. Our school works more on just specific business avenues. So, for example, our biggest makeup is financial economics. So a lot of guys will go in that realm. They'll take a business track, you know, they'll take accounting, they'll take entrepreneurship, et cetera, micro, macro, and they'll go that route. So that's a big one for us is financial econ.
Shifting gears a little bit, we're recording this on the afternoon of September 3rd. You might be listening to this on the morning of September 4th because it's when I'm intending to release it. And I believe you're 4 days into practice with this current team. How do you describe what that's been like in terms of, can you already get a sense for the vibe among the group and what makes a UMBC lacrosse player a UMBC lacrosse player?
You know, it's funny, throughout the process and learning more about the school and talking to people associated, you hear blue collar a lot, you hear closeness, a lot of success over the years with some public school Maryland kids. I just think what I've learned is it's a great group, one that I'm really excited about. I think anywhere you're at, you want the lacrosse component to be the highlight of your day. And I can say firmly those four practices have been just a breath of fresh air to be back out on the field and seeing smiles and excitement, but also pace of play, the discipline, you know, the installation of a new culture and what the standards are going to look like. But really courteous, disciplined guys who are excited for, you know, a new direction and excited for the task at hand. We've got some big aspirations and things that we want to accomplish as a group, and we're going to focus on getting better every single day.
You teased this at the top, but certainly it's impossible to have a conversation right now without discussing all the changes within college athletics and 5-5 and whether or not players in the high school class of 2022, specifically those who have already played for a professional sports team, are eligible is, I mean, maybe something has come out of the courts in Louisiana over the, or Georgia, I don't even know. I think it's in Louisiana over the course of when we've been recording this, but that's only one element of it, right? Because, you know, certainly with a roster cap in place, the changing of the divisor for how many classes go into 48 is a significant factor in terms of how many players you plan to bring in. I think that with respect to the distinction between a mid-major and a high major, there's been a lot of supposition that, you know, if a class would typically be somewhere between 9 and 12, and now as a result of this reduction, it's going to be between 7 and 10 or whatever the case might be, you know, that there is going to be a trickle-down effect as a result. And one of the other factors in that is that it's going to accelerate the speed of commitment among the folks that are trying to get those high major spots. How does that inform your and your staff's approach, not just in terms of building your list, but also how you're going to communicate, how you're going to reach out, you know, starting at on September 9th at 7 a.m.?
You know, I think we're certainly going to have our list narrowed down to exactly who we're going to go after. You know, you start with a really, really big list. You do your homework, you narrow that down, and then we'll narrow that list down even further. We're going to be aggressive in getting the right people on campus, getting them here to meet the players, the ambassadors of our program, meet our staff, see our facilities, learn about our degree. And again, we're going to want guys who want to graduate from a top 50 ranked public institution in the country and want that education and want to be prepared with the tools for life, the guys that want to have a great college experience and ultimately want to win, and guys who are competitive. So we're going to probably bring in closer to that 12 range, which will be different and larger than some other classes. We've only got 41 guys on our roster right now. So we have a little bit more flexibility than some of the other schools and the positions that they've put themselves in. And, you know, candidly, the way the rules have changed with the fifth year, that has also put people in those situations. So I think like anything, you got to be adaptive. You got to you know, continue to mesh. You're not always going to change, you know, the outcome. You can change your response. You can't change the event that's going to be there. And that's going to create the best possible outcome for each program. So for us, we'll be aggressive. We've identified what we want to bring in at each position going into this class. I think it'll be interesting, right, to see some of the specialists and does that change with if people are only going to bring in, you know, six recruits and are they going to rely on the portal or whatever? But we continue. We want to be a team that people want to go to, and we want to get the right people. And a lot of that's through recruiting and them learning your culture, being in that process, learning your systems. And I think it's like professional sports, right? If that's your draft, you got to be a great drafting team of identifying and developing. And then there's always going to be the portal, which is more like your free agency, where if there's a position of need or an area of growth, you can go out there and maybe get one or two guys that can help push your team over the top.
What do you expect your timeline to be in order to get to 12 commits in the class of 28?
You know, I think that's a great question, right? Obviously, this year will be a little bit of just learning and adapting to being to a new place. You know, I think sometimes you don't want to be in a race. Sometimes the best thing you can have is an opportunity, a golden ticket at the end to be able to give out to somebody that develops maybe slower, but has a really high potential. And you want to evaluate them a few more times this fall or even into next spring in their high school season. So, I mean, I've seen it time and time again over the last 14 years of doing this is some of the guys you get late end up being the best guys in your class. And it's not where you started. It's not where you're ranked. It's what you do with your opportunity. We tell that to all of our committed guys once they're here. And we have a saying that close the yearbook. You know, at that point, what you did in high school is irrelevant. It's not going to define what you do with your college experience. And I do think we'll take some guys early in this first month. And I would think by the end of the fall and by the end of going into the holiday break, you know, I would say probably 75% would probably be my goal if I was going to put one out there for where we finish our class.
Given the circumstances around which you're entering this role, what is your thought in terms of, you know, how you would respond to a recruiter or a parent who, you know, expressed some concern around stability within the program or the staff?
Yeah, you know, I think that's why finding the right fit for you as a school is so important. Again, you're going to spend so much time with the staff, with the players in the program, and being at a place that you feel like you can be happy, that you're going to get that degree, that it's going to set you up for future success is so important. And, you know, again, you got to really do your homework and make sure that's a great fit for you and that your family supports that. And you know, I'm confident with what we're going to do here at UMBC that those players that come here will have that experience.
What do you think of the move from September 1st to September 9th? For me, I'm surprised by how beneficial the extra 9 days has been for our staff just in terms of preparing. I guess, you know, the beginning of the preparation phase didn't change, right? It's effectively July 31st. You kind of sprint through the finish in terms of trying to be on sidelines and evaluate. And while you're doing that, you're not doing the office computer-based work, at least at the same level of volume and efficiency that you do once August 1st hits, right? So you just add 9 days to the end of it. And for me, like when I remember I reported it that it was going to change, and I didn't necessarily like intellectualize, oh wow, like that's increasing the amount of time by like almost a third. How have you found it in terms of the way that your group has been able to utilize the extra time to prepare?
Well, this year I'm definitely not complaining about it. Getting those extra practices in to evaluate our roster now was really beneficial for all of us to continue to align and speak the same language. It is bizarre, you know, women's lacrosse and talking to our women's staff, they're still September 1 and we're giving them fist bumps and dapping them up and getting them excited for their start of their chase, which was this week, obviously a few days ago. But for us, it's like, well, when's your recruiting? And now I feel like I can't say a firm date because it's going to constantly change. Well, it's going to be a Wednesday and it's going to be after Labor Day. So this year beneficial, but you know, I don't know if it's super significant. I know some schools will be upset with losing potentially a home football game or an opportunity, a thing like that. But at the end of the day, there's pros and cons to everything. And, you know, it is what it is. And we're going to make the best of it.
I want to circle back to the last thing, or the last thing I want to bring up is to circle back to something that I started the conversation with, which was my framing of how I understand your relationship to recruiting to be. But let me just ask the question, do you love recruiting?
I do. I think there's so many things you kind of have to do it. You have to love it if you're going to be good at it, or if you're going to stand and you see, one of the things that was said to me when I was a young assistant coach, I remember going to the convention, and this would have been like maybe 2014 or something. And they said of all the assistant coaches in the room, they said, look around, in 5 years, 90% of them won't be there. And that stat, just like, again, who knows if that's exact, I don't know if that's a factual stat, so take that with a grain of salt. But the point and the emphasis was made. And you see so many people leave our field. You got to love what you do. And if you love what you do every single day, it's not a job, it's something that you're passionate about. I mean, that's great. And recruiting's arguably one of the most important things, if not the most important thing that you do as a coach. When I'm looking for assistant coaches, how good are they at building relationships? How well can they recruit? Because, coaches coach, but players ultimately are the ones that are helping us win championships, good players can do a lot for coaches. So it's a skill, and if you love it and you make it competitive like anything else in life, you're going to be better at it. But I love it. I love getting on the road. I love seeing, friends and colleagues from other schools and different places that you don't get to see. You get to see them after the season, just trade stories, all that kind of stuff. It's a lot of fun, and at the same time, it's just fun to evaluate kids and see the growth from event to and after the dead period and the guys are recharged and shot out of a cannon again, to see the little pick me up there in the start of July and then going into November, etc. So it's fun, we enjoy it, and I think you kind of have to if you love what you do.
It's a great note to end on. James Papur, thank you so much for joining us on the How Recruiting Works podcast.
Thanks, Terry, always good catching up.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.